The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Betting Big on Startups. Investors from all across the globe poured a record amount of money into Triangle startups last year with the hope of a fruitful exit. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Betting Big on Startups. Investors found the Triangle to be fertile ground in 2021 as a number of companies led by Epic Games added cash. Written by Lauren Onasorge. 2021 was a year of mega rounds and unicorns in the Triangle, as at least 132 funders raised at least $1 million in the year. At least 24 Triangle area funders topped $20 million, and about six entities topped $100 million, and one Epic Games raised $1 billion. Of the top 10 fundraises for growth companies in 2021 in the Triangle, a sweep of securities filings and corporate disclosure show half were in the technology space, including four of the top five. And the Triangle isn't alone. Data released by PitchBook show capital investments in U.S. startups nearly doubled year over year to $330 billion. But there are challenges, particularly when it comes to minority-founded firms, which were absent from the top five funders in the Triangle. While it remains to be seen whether companies can meet investor-driven expectations in 2022, the statistics are clear. Companies can raise capital outside of Silicon Valley, and they can do it over a Zoom call. Here's a look at who was raising capital in the Triangle even as COVID numbers rose. Technology. The money was flowing in 2021 and valuations were high, too high, say some investors. Mitch Mumma, a partner at Durham's InnerSouth Partners, says the biggest challenge for 2022 for startups will be growing into the valuation of the last round of financing. In the technology space, tenured entrepreneurs were the ones best able to swing the big raises in the Triangle. Take Scott Wingo, the serial entrepreneur behind Channel Advisor. His latest startup, on-demand car care startup, Get Spiffy, secured $22 million to expand its national reach. While Wingo says it was tough raising capital over Zoom, investors such as Jason Kaplan of Bull City Venture Partners says virtual negotiations were an easier sell with people such as Wingo, who they'd worked with on past deals. Other seasoned entrepreneurs raising capital included Levitate and Prion. Levitate, founded by ShareFile founder Jesse Lipson, raised $8 million. Prion, a Raleigh AI startup helmed by Igor Jablokov, whose last startup sold to Amazon, clinched $12 million, including from Silicon Valley backers. And the biggest raise of all came from an entrepreneur who has eclipsed them all in tenure at his company. Epic Games, still led by founder Tim Sweeney, secured $1 billion in April. Cloud firms were also among those getting beefy funders, such as Chapel Hill-based data integration startup CData Software, which scored $140 million from a single investor, Updata Partners, in December. With COVID, the need for the cloud has grown more rapidly than any of us had anticipated, CEO Amit Sharma says. Getting people to work together and collaborate requires these cloud systems, and so data is increasingly going toward the cloud. Consumer goods slash other. From a toy subscription company, Durham's Tiny Earth Toys, which raised nearly $1.5 million in October, to vegan dog food, Wild Earth raised $23 million in August, consumer goods had it all in 2021. Companies new and old reeled in dollars for often out-of-the-box ideas such as Wild Earth, which is trying to break vegan dog food into the mainstream. The company, which moved from California to the Triangle, is led by Shark Tank alum Ryan Bethencourt. Bethencourt moved the company to the Triangle as a cost savings play, and the firm cut expenses in half by just changing its address. But the move did not inhibit its ability to reel in venture financing. In consumer goods, beverages were hot, at times literally, as coffee startup 321 Coffee, which differentiates with its neurodiverse workforce, raised a $300,000 debt round in October to keep the hot beverage flowing as it expanded into downtown Raleigh. But it was one of many. non-alcoholic cocktail startup RSRV Collective, for example, closed on $820,000 of a planned $1 million round in November. Durham tea infuser maker Mosey Tea added $440,000 to its coffers in December. And Durham Distillery raised $4.5 million to expand its spirits company in December. But the category did veer outside of the beverage aisle, with Raleigh's all-natural outdoors company, Murphy's Naturals, adding more than $4.2 million in November. The other category was also expansive, showcasing the area's industry diversity, with firms such as Raleigh's Sinovatech raising nearly $4 million to open up the world of food processing to small companies. For consumer-facing companies, funding is only one challenge. John Rapogel, an investor with the One Better Ventures, whose portfolio includes beverage startups such as Slingshot Coffee, says the route to market will be a big one. For beverage companies, it's controlled by a few big companies, and if a startup can get an in, they'll have to use a broker where the markup can be high. Ag tech. Big ambitions. It's what companies successfully raising capital in the ag tech space had in common in 2021. Raleigh-based Harp Bio Herbicide Solutions, for example, leveraged experience to sell those ambitions to investors as it was raising $1.1 million. Company CEO Bill Buckner, an 18-year veteran of crop science's giant Bayer, could leverage his resume while showcasing the demand for something like what Harp is creating. In the U.S. alone, farmers experience $33 billion in economic losses annually from weeds overtaking crops, and Harp is trying to answer that challenge with its natural biological herbicide portfolio. As with other sectors, it wasn't just the seasoned companies getting the dollars. Crop protection startup 5Metis, for example, was founded in 2021 with the merger of Borigen's crop protection division and AgriMetis, and it reeled in $10 million in October, after previously raising $600,000 in July. And finally, Life Sciences, a nearly seven-year-old startup with Duke University roots, seemed the perfect example of what investors were looking for in Triangle Innovation in 2021. Investors, big and small, wanted to fund growth opportunities stemming from the ongoing pandemic, and Durham's Evexia Therapeutics delivered, with its technology targeting something that has been on the rise as COVID-19 lingers, depression. The company, which has raised more than $8.6 million of a planned $35 million round last year, was targeting an unmet need, one heightened by the pandemic, and it was backing its pitches with science. But investments varied in 2021 and included huge coffers for early-stage science. In biotech, the volatility of the public markets has made earlier stage private investments more appealing to some investors, which seems to reinforce smaller early stage rounds, says Art Pappas, CEO of Pappas Ventures in Durham. That could be why so many dollars were funneled into new companies. Take Tune Therapeutics, a startup out of former Precision Biosciences that emerged in December with a $40 million coffer, a team of 35, and an aggressive goal to target common diseases with genetic medicines. Gene Therapy 2 was a repeated trend in 2021. Opus Genetics, for example, raised $19 million. The Raleigh Gene Therapy startup is targeting retinal diseases and secured $10 million of that sum from the venture arm of the Foundation Fighting Blindness. And female founders, too, found success, such as Isolair Vio, which raised $7 million to scale up its purification technology for biotherapeutics. The first phase is really for us to send our materials out and our protocol to these collaborators to make sure that it's repeatable in someone else's hands, CEO Kelly Lugenbull says. And then from there, we'll be working with these companies to demonstrate that the technology scales up. And now we'll turn to the continuing series in the Triangle Business Journal, 52 Shades of Success. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ+ community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project also will delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. The headline for this week, Talent Redeployed. Bunker Labs works to help set up military veterans for business success. Story by Connie Gentry. Former Marine Corps officer Blake Hogan describes his initial foray into entrepreneurship as a lesson in how to lose money. Hogan, who began a tech startup in Austin, Texas after retiring from military service in 2012, says running that business taught him how to do everything the wrong way. Now, as the CEO of Bunker Labs, Hogan is helping build an ecosystem that rallies business leaders and civic organizations around veteran entrepreneurs. Bunker Labs is a national nonprofit based in Chicago that facilitates networks, training, and strategic skill sets to help military veterans and military spouses grow successful businesses. It launched in 2014 in Austin and has chapters in 40 cities around the country, including Raleigh-Durham, Charlotte, and Wilmington. After Austin and Chicago, Raleigh-Durham was the next chapter to launch, Hogan says. He credits those who started the Triangle chapter, Nick Bradfield and Dean Bunshu, with setting the stage for chapters around the country. They were instrumental in showing us what good looks like. A lot of what we're doing around the country is based on the work that's been done in Raleigh, Hogan says. Veterans in Residence, the nonprofit's flagship program, is a six-month incubator for early-stage entrepreneurs. Bunker Labs also has two 12-month programs, CEO Circle, for late-stage entrepreneurs that have $5 million or more in annual revenue, and an ambassador fellowship for volunteers to serve as leaders and mentors. Raleigh is an example of how to run a strong Bunker Labs cohort. At the core, it's all about building entrepreneurial networks and partnering with great people and great organizations, like the partnerships with NC Idea and American Underground, Hogan says. Bradfield, a Marine Corps veteran who launched a fintech company after retiring from the military, was part of Raleigh's first Veterans in Residence cohort in 2016. A year later, I was still volunteering and helping grow the Raleigh chapter, so when there was an opportunity to join the Bunker Labs team, I stepped away from my company, says Bradfield, who is now National Director of Program Design at Bunker Labs. Our focus in Raleigh was on building a local ecosystem, and we were bringing in people not to compete, but to collaborate. A survey of more than 700 Bunker Lab participants revealed that between 2015 and 2019, their companies had collectively earned more than $812 million in revenue, raised over $298 million in capital, and employed over 2,800 people. By the end of 2020, more than 3,500 entrepreneurs had been directly supported by Bunker Labs. The Veterans in Residence cohort for the first half of 2022 features 241 entrepreneurs across 23 cities. A diverse and inclusive organization, Bunker Labs' 2020 annual report states that its racial and ethnic diversity is double that of the general veteran population. The percentage of female veterans in Bunker Labs is two times higher than in the general veteran population. And 60% of the Bunker Labs community are service-disabled veterans. In addition to serving retired military veterans, 10% of Bunker Lab participants are active-duty military, and 9% are military spouses. We want our participants to mirror the military community, so we have a blind application process, which means we remove all of the demographic information so that people reviewing applicants are just looking at whether the applicant is a fit for the program, removing all bias from the equation, Bradfield explains. Step two is that we unblind the applications to the people who complete the review so they can see if those top applicants have what I refer to as scene diversity, meaning there is a kaleidoscope of people so that what you see is a group that does not all look the same. The goal is to ensure that veterans from underrepresented communities are always included and to help veterans wherever they happen to be in the process of starting a business. However, in order to be accepted into a Veterans in Residence or VIR cohort, they have to be past the idea stage. They need to have moved beyond the notes on a napkin business plan. We're looking to extend the runway to help them find customers, make connections to potential investors, and connect with other resources or people who can help grow their business, Bradfield says. That's where Bunker Labs' Breaking Barriers program comes into play. Breaking Barriers is an 8-week virtual workshop focused on providing entrepreneurs from underrepresented communities with access to business tools, resources, mentors, and a peer network. There are groups dedicated to Black, Latinx, Asian, and female veterans and military spouses. The workshops are focused on diversity and the pool of people we did not get into a VIR cohort, Bradfield adds. It's less about curriculum and more about interactions with other people in the cohort and the ability to learn from one another and collaborate. That is precisely what is happening with Paul Torres, an Army veteran who was deployed 6 times in his 10 years of service. After retiring from service in 2019, Torres turned his passion for auto detailing into Gold Standard Auto Works, a business he launched in December of that year from his home in Moore County. When he applied for the Veterans in Residence cohort in 2021, he was denied, but after completing the Breaking Barriers workshop, Torres is one of 9 entrepreneurs in Raleigh's current VIR cohort. He started the business with $300 from his personal savings, and after the first month, he was turning a profit and topped 5 figures in the first year. Even though he was running it as a side gig to his full-time civilian job working in IT at Fort Bragg. In a community steeped in military pride, Torres says he introduces his business as veteran-owned, and while he's proud of his Mexican heritage, that aspect is rarely mentioned. I've never had a customer mention they chose my business because of my Hispanic heritage, but I've also never had a customer say they chose me solely because the business is veteran-owned, Torres says. But I do get feedback and conversation around the veteran-owned status. People thank me for my service. Where I see the minority-owned aspect have an effect is in business circles. Torres is excited about monetizing his passion for working on cars, but what he is most enthusiastic about is learning about business and growing his company. I researched how to do SEO, and in about 6 months, I could see the fruits of that effort. Before, my business was on page 17 if you did a Google search. Now, if you search auto detailing near me, my business comes up on the first page. Next on his list is to grow the business, and leveraging the knowledge and network from his Bunker Labs experience is a step in that direction, and perhaps a path to finding a silent partner to invest in the business. He's looking to purchase a van that can operate solely as a detail vehicle and hire a full-time operator. Hogan says the best way that established companies can support the nonprofit's efforts is to do business with Bunker Labs participants. In addition to Torres, the current VIR at Bunker Labs Raleigh-Durham include Jamie Aguirre, Traverse Operations Solutions, Monica Goodson, Happy Products, Chris Lewis, SPOTR, Spotter Industries and Vets to Drones, and Alicia Ober, Hiring to Healing. And we have a couple of news items in the 52 Shades of Success section. Nonprofit leaders to watch. United Way of the Greater Triangle announced the leader selected for the second cohort of its 10 to Watch initiative, which was launched in 2018. The program addresses racial, gender, and resource disparities in local nonprofit leadership and invests more than $500,000 over 2 years, with $25,000 going to each leader and organization per year. The 2021 to 2023 10 to Watch leaders are Tamika Brown, Hearts, Rhonda Taylor Bullock, We Are NC, Tova Hairston, Boomerang Youth, Tululope Omakairi, Evolve Mentoring, Tojan Rahal, Engineering World Health, Janice Ramirez, ISLA, Annie Schmidt, NAMI, N-A-M-I, Wake County, Joy Spencer, Equity Before Birth, Nora L. Corey Spencer, MSW, Hope Renovations, and Jared Staten, the Helios Foundation. In addition, United Way is collaborating with Leadership Triangle to offer leadership development opportunities. And finally, Cary's Chinese Lantern Festival sets new attendance record. When the North Carolina Chinese Lantern Festival concluded January 9, it set new records as the top tourism destination in Cary. A record attendance of 200,000 visitors was nearly double the former record of 121,645 attendees in 2019. The festival was canceled in 2020 due to the pandemic. According to data from the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau, the festival's direct economic impact exceeded $5.54 million. In its statement celebrating the event, the town of Cary noted that figure is a conservative estimate that does not include spending from local attendees. It only represents the income from tourists, reflecting new money coming into the local economy. The event, which ran from November 19 through January 9, draws attendees from across the state and throughout the region. The 2022 Chinese Lantern Festival is set for November. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. North Hills Tower changes name, sets date. A North Hills tower with an impressive height is also coming with an elevated price. Kane Realty Corporation expects the first residents to move into the Eastern Residences in April. The 36-story Eastern, previously called the Walter, includes 21 penthouses. Those start at $7,075 per month, and the most expensive is the Lookout, which features three bedrooms and 22,286 square feet at a price starting at $13,775 a month. The Eastern has 376 apartments overall and was 2% leased after applications opened in mid-January. And if the Lookout is a bit out of your price range, you can always step down to the Governor for just over $10,000 a month. It might not be as big as downtown Raleigh's Executive Mansion, but still, you can't beat the view. Iconic building gets new life. The Elks building in New Bern, which has sat vacant for over a decade, is getting a new life as a boutique hotel. The building dates to 1908 and is the tallest in New Bern. The structure will be converted into a 50-room hotel with 1,500 square feet of meeting and event space. On the lower level, there will also be a coffee shop, restaurant, and speakeasy. The hotel is being developed by the Kessler Collection, an Orlando-based group that has developed boutique hotels across the South. This will be the brand's third hotel in North Carolina, including Grand Bohemian Hotel Asheville and Grand Bohemian Hotel Charlotte. Students raise funds, electronics. A group of Triangle High School students with a philanthropic bent are turning their attention to helping students in Honduras. Isaac Lund, a junior at Green Hope High School, and some friends started a nonprofit called Service Beakers to provide free science lessons for more than 3,600 students in eight local schools. Now the group has raised more than $40,000 worth of electronics in addition to $10,000 in funding to provide for students in need in Honduras. The goal is to take laptops, monitors, and more to Honduras in March to help connect the students to modern technology. New role brings fresh challenges. Todd Chatterton has a new role and some common challenges as the food and beverage service director at the Farrington House Inn and Restaurant. He graduated from the Culinary Institute of America in 2014 and joined Farrington in 2019 as a sommelier. Taking on a service staff management position in a time of a crippling labor shortage in the industry and the Omicron variant surging has Chatterton looking at the positives. If I'm able to overcome these challenges and come out better for it, then that just makes me stronger and makes the restaurant stronger as a whole, he says. Items from BTI's Lofton to be sold. Some personal items of Peter Lofton, who founded Business Telecom, or BTI, when he was 25 years old, are coming up for bids in an online auction that begins this month. Lofton later founded Bardstown Bourbon in 2016. Iron Horse Auction is managing the sale. Peter Lofton had so many custom items that you don't get to see every day, says Iron Horse's Chris Crawford. The items include a Rolex Yachtmaster II wristwatch, several custom-made Clint Orms, James Reed, and Sunset Trails Western-style belts, as well as a large collection of J.B. Hill custom handmade boots. Also available will be Persian rugs, a pair of Ralph Lauren leather chairs, ladies' diamond wristwatches, and men's clothing. Online bidding began January 27 at ironhorseauction.com and closes at 2 p.m. on February 3rd. Lofton died November 16, 2019, at the age of 61. And finally, Betty White's birthday is a big hit for Wake Animal Shelter. Actress Betty White, an original Golden Girl, had a golden touch for animals at the end. White was a lifelong animal lover, and her death right before her 100th birthday sparked a national show of support for animals. White died December 31 and would have turned 100 on January 17. On her birthday, social media campaigns popped up to raise money for pet shelters and similar organizations, and it worked. In fact, the Wake County Animal Shelter raised $16,000 that day, and so far more than 600 people have donated for a total of $22,052. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Greater Triangle Growth, written by Evan Hoopfer. CSX targets Lee County site for new rail yard. Rail giant wants to rezone 244 acres to heavy industrial. One of the country's largest rail companies is looking to construct a new rail yard outside Sanford in a move that would be a boon for the local industrial market. CSX Corporation is seeking to rezone 244 acres from residential agriculture to heavy industrial to develop a new rail yard, according to a rezoning application filed with Lee County. In December, Triangle Business Journal reported CSX was looking to purchase land in Lee County. The strip of land runs southwest from Farrell Road south of Osgood Road and is about 7 miles northeast of downtown Sanford. The site is proximity to both Central Carolina Enterprise Park and the 2,150-acre Triangle Innovation Point, formerly known as the Moncure Megasite, just across the county line in Chatham County. According to the rezoning application, CSX intends to purchase the land and develop the site. The vacant land is currently owned by Bullard Trailer Sales No. 2, Incorporated, and sits along a CSX rail line. Regarding the proposed facility, Lee County staff writes that the request does not conform with the recommendation of the long-range plan designation of countryside. However, it is a unique location given the access to two railroads and a public road, which may warrant a reasonable expectation that the property would be used for a commercial purpose. The staff adds that ultimately is up to the Board of Commissioners to determine how the county should grow and if they are comfortable with the proposed development of this site in the manner proposed. A spokesman for Jacksonville, Florida-based CSX did not respond to a request for comment. North Carolina Horse Farm remains for sale after offer falls through. A sprawling horse farm in southeast North Carolina remains on the market after a potential sale fell through. The 350-acre Butler Farm at 440 Devon Drive in White Oak was scheduled to go to auction last November. However, the property received a direct offer from a potential buyer prior and did not end up going to auction, says Treyer Lesnock, founder and president of Platinum Luxury Auctions. While that offer would have likely ranked among one of the highest-ranked farm sales in North Carolina, it was not successful, Lesnock says. The property remains for sale. A spokesperson for Platinum Luxury Auctions did not respond to an inquiry of whether another auction would be scheduled for the property, which is listed for sale by Hodge & Cottrell Sotheby's International Realty. The farm, previously listed for sale at $8 million, is about half an hour south of Fayetteville. Sanford looks to add jobs with spec building. The Sanford City Council recently approved a resolution that will spur construction of a speculative 117,000-square-foot industrial building in Central Carolina Enterprise Park. The local government agreed to pay the lease for a spec building for up to 2 years after construction is finished or until a tenant can be found, whichever comes first. The program has been used before. Life sciences companies Astellas and Abzena filled the shell building in the park, and Sanford has yet to spend a penny in rent on the spec buildings, said Jimmy Randolph, the CEO of Sanford Area Growth Alliance. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Bob Luddy, founder of private school Thales. After the school recently purchased 15 acres in Franklin County as it plans its first schools in the county. Our plan is to build two Thales schools, K-5 and 6-12. Date? TBD. And finally, a big number, $100 million. Dallas-based Reeder Land Development Company recently received a $100 million credit facility to develop single-family master-planned communities across the South. Executives say the two areas they're concentrated on are Dallas-Fort Worth and the Triangle and its outlying counties. Now we turn to the On Tech and Startups page, written by Lauren Onisorge. Morrisville startup drops Shark Tank. Incredible Eats, now focused on deals with Dippin' Dots, others. From ABC to a deal with Dippin' Dots, it's been quite a ride for Morrisville's Dinesh Tetapali. 3 months after making his Shark Tank debut with his edible spoon startup, Incredible Eats, Tetapali is still riding the wave. That's as the deal he closed on the show with Lori Greiner of Home Shopping Network fame didn't actually close. They changed the deal terms, Tetapali says, declining to provide details. The show did, however, give the startup massive exposure, which he credits to key partnerships, such as the one he just announced with ice cream company Dippin' Dots, as well as the nearly 150,000 pre-orders he's in the process of fulfilling. Despite challenging shipping issues, a swath of spoons arrived at his warehouse this week, meaning soon all of those orders will be fulfilled, he says. Tadipali's big headline, however, is the partnerships. He had reached out to Dippin' Dots via LinkedIn before the Shark Tank episode aired, and conversations slowly escalated, he says. In addition to Dippin' Dots, the company has inked deals with Ripley's Aquarium locations in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Tadipali is also in discussions with a major ice cream retailer, an airline, and a fast food company. He appeared on Shark Tank in October, telling the investors he wants to change the world by completely eliminating plastic utensils. Four sharks made offers. Tadipali asked for $500,000 in exchange for 7% of the company. Griner ended up offering $500,000 for 15%. Raleigh firm wants to grow oysters in a lab. Growing oysters in a lab, no dredging required. That's the mission of Perlita Foods, a recently launched Raleigh startup armed with $250,000 from Sustainable Food Ventures and Big Idea Ventures' new protein fund. CEO Nikita Michelson, whose background is in information technology, co-founded the firm with marine biologist Joey Peters as a way of creating sustainable seafood, specifically oysters. We don't realize as we put our waste out in the ocean, it starts to accumulate in the tissues of things, Peter says. But what if you could grow seafood tissue outside of the ocean, avoiding those contaminants entirely? The science is complex. Peters explains it as taking cells, isolating them, and getting them to divide. But in terms of product, Perlita is starting simple, flavor first. Michelson says the first product will be an oyster sauce, but it will still be a years-long challenge getting the flavor just right. Carry quantum computing startup raises $60 million. Less than a year into Lenovo veteran Rob Hayes' tenure leading Atom Computing and Carry, the quantum computing company has raised $60 million. The raise gives the company, which relocated its administrative headquarters from California to Carry last year, a runway to prove out its technology and then get a plan to go to scale it, Hayes says. Just having more investment coming to the technology, it's good overall for the ecosystem here, he says, of the Triangle. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Alex Lassiter, founder of Green Places, on why he contributed to Raleigh-based workflow automation startup Wrangle's recently announced $2 million fundraise. The future of work will require managers to track collaboration across multiple employees in different geographies, and there aren't any good tools to do that today. The Wrangle founding team is strong, and I believe they'll figure out how to solve this problem. And we also have a tweet of the week, and this is from Tim Sweeney of Epic, his at Tim Sweeney Epic. The headline of it is C Mark 83637. In light of Microsoft's planned buyout of Activision Blizzard, Epic Games CEO Tim Sweeney was asked about a possible Apple Epic deal. Sweeney, who has sued Apple over what he sees as a monopoly, referred to a Bible verse that reads, "For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" Now we turn to On Healthcare and Higher Education, written by Zach Ezone. UNC creates new breast cancer center. Thanks to a donor, UNC plans for more breast cancer research. UNC Chapel Hill is ramping up its breast cancer research following a $25 million donation. The gift to the university establishes the UNC Lineberger Center for Triple-Negative Breast Cancer, which will advance research efforts on the highly aggressive subtype of breast cancer. Triple-negative breast cancer doesn't have the receptors that function as drug targets in the treatment of other breast cancers. Because of this, triple-negative breast cancer is generally only treated with chemotherapy and has poorer outcomes than other breast cancers. It's defined by what we don't have, which is a targeted abnormality, says Dr. Lisa Carey, the director of the newly formed center. With this donation, the largest gift in UNC Lineberger's history, the university plans to research new treatment options. This includes advancing a clinical trial that uses a method called chimeric antigen receptor T-cell, or CAR-T, immunotherapy. Carey says this trial will likely launch within a year. Additionally, the center will use the money to bring together researchers who will deep dive into the genetics of triple negative and other types of cancers, which could improve diagnostics and uncover new treatment targets. The funding will also support research into how metabolism and nutrition can impact disease prevention. The donors, who are remaining anonymous, made the donation in gratitude after a family member was treated for cancer at UNC. While the donation is focused on triple-negative breast cancer, it's not limited to only that subtype. The donors want the money to help advance cancer research in general, Carey says. When you advance science in cancer research, you don't just advance science in that cancer, Carey says. Triple-negative breast cancer accounts for about 15% of all new cancer cases in the U.S., which average about 260,000 annually. This type of cancer disproportionately affects women of color and young women. Wake Tech launches Small Biz Accelerator. Wake Technical Community College is launching an accelerator program through which a number of small business owners could receive between $2,000 to $8,000. Through the Main Street Entrepreneurs Accelerator Program, the college is trying to make capital available to business owners and help students achieve economic mobility, says Cherith Robertson, director of startup at Wake Tech and the Small Business Center. The center works with hundreds of businesses each year on various subjects, but funding is a key issue. Many of the center's clients are minority-owned businesses, which typically have a harder time accessing capital. It was born out of this need of, if you need money to make money, how do we reduce that barrier a little bit and help our small business owners have a chance to grow, Robertson says. Carey CRO beefs up as shift to remote trials continues. A Carey firm focused on modernizing decentralized clinical trials has completed its second acquisition in the last 3 months. This month, Thread acquired California firm InVibe, which adds voice research technology to Thread's platform. This allows the company to analyze and integrate data from verbal patient input into the design of clinical trials. The acquisitions bring new capabilities to Thread, which serves hundreds of large pharmaceutical companies, mid-sized biotechs, and contract research organizations as its customers. And we have another quote, this one from Thomas Stith, president of the North Carolina Community College System, on the $244.52 million budget increase the system is requesting from state lawmakers. This strategy gives us a three-year horizon, but also positions our community college system, third largest in the country, in a better competitive position. And finally, a big number, $170 million. That's how much the National Institutes of Health is investing in a nutrition study with a significant presence in the Triangle. RTI International and UNC Chapel Hill are two of the recipients of the 14 contracts the NIH awarded for the Nutrition for Precision Health Study. And now we move over to the On Retail and Restaurants page written by Laura Brumette. Whitley Furniture closing after 113 years. Buildings at site of longtime Zebulon store will be sold. A downtown Zebulon institution is going out of business after a 113-year run, and the property is now up for sale. Whitley Furniture Galleries, a fourth-generation family business, will close its doors as the current owners plan to retire. Founded by R.J. Whitley as Zebulon Supply Company in 1909, the furniture retailer now spans an entire city block on Van Street downtown. Whitley's eight adjacent buildings are all on the market, listed as perfect for redevelopment at $5.29 million. The company is currently owned by brother and sister duo Charles Estes and Nell Carroll, who are ready to retire from the business. And with all other family members having their own careers, that means the end to Whitley Furniture Galleries. Business was good as it's ever been last year, and inventory levels are as high as they've ever been, Estes says. There's just really not a fifth generation. Carol and Estes say they did explore options besides shutting down, including selling the business. They decided closing was the best option since selling the family-owned real estate along with the company posed more challenges. Estes also notes their excitement for what could become of the buildings. In total, the buildings feature just over 65,000 square feet of space on 1.58 acres. Instead of having one business on the street, we could end up with eight or nine new stores, Estes says. We'd like to see restaurants or retail. There are two-story buildings that would provide residential space. Estes joined the company in 1977, and his sister joined in 1992. R.J. Whitley was their great-grandfather. Estes is planning on entering a traditional retirement, while Carol says she may explore other opportunities. Since sharing the news of the closure, customers have come in from across the triangle to say goodbye, Estes says. I think the most common word is sad, Carol says of the community response. It's sad for customers. It's really sad for us. It's been a very emotional decision. California investor debuts in Triangle. A California investor is making its debut in the Triangle with the purchase of a retail property in Apex. The $7.38 million deal gives Prudent Guard Investments, LLC, 4.59 acres of land in Apex, home to a Carrabba's Italian Grill and Defy Apex Trampoline Park. Located at 1275 Haddon Hall Drive in Apex, the property was sold by an LLC affiliated with California-based Pacific Equities Capital Management Corporation, according to Wake County Property Records. The seller was represented by Greg Marks and Yezin Hamad with Triland Property of Cary, and the buyer was represented by Daniel Chang with Avis & Young. The purchasing LLC is registered to Yan Sun and Shengming Lu. The buyers moved to Cary around 6 months ago and plan to invest more in the Triangle, as well as bring other investors they know into the area, Chang says. Raleigh architecture firm acquired. Charlotte-based Redline Design Group has purchased Phillips Architecture of Raleigh for $4 million and will transition the Raleigh office to the Redline name. The company headquarters will remain in Charlotte. Phillips Architecture had 24 employees prior to the deal. All except for founding partner Mike Phillips will be staying. Phillips has chosen to retire, according to Redline president David Eve. The combined firm has 70 total employees. Jason Bird, formerly the president of Phillips Architecture, will transition to principal and a director at Redline. For 2021, Eve projects Redline's revenue to be $10.5 million and the Phillips firm to be around $7.5 million. And we have a quote in She Said It section from Krista Early, advocate at Environmental North Carolina Research and Policy Center, on how big box retail stores could be the answer to the state's clean energy efforts. The flat, open, sunny roofs of giant grocery stores, retail stores, and shopping malls are perfect locations for solar panels. And finally, a big number, 40. That's the number of participants in this year's Triangle Restaurant Week, which ends January 30. Supply shortages, a depleted labor pool, and the Omicron variant have caused this year to have the lowest number of participants in 10 years, down from the event's peak of 104, founder Damon Butler says. And now we turn to On Real Estate, written by Caleb Harshberger. Turnbridge eyes warehouse district, tower up to 20 stories expected, but details still being discussed. The New York developer behind the Creamery development in Glenwood South has turned its eyes for its next mixed-use tower to the warehouse district and an assemblage that includes the home of late Raleigh architect Steve Schuster. Earlier in January, the Raleigh Historical Commission recommended approval to the Planning Commission for Turnbridge Equity's rezoning request to allow up to 20 stories of mixed-use developments for a collection of parcels at the corner of Commerce Place and West Martin Street. The company filed a rezoning request last year, though its name was not included in those documents at the time. Conditions in the request include extensive historical protections requiring the preservation of the existing structures. The filing covers an assemblage totaling 1.2 acres across two parcels, the first with addresses 307, 309, 311, and 313 West Martin Street, and the second at 310 South Dawson Street. No development plans have yet been submitted this early in the process, and Managing Director Jason Davis says the future project will be a residential or office mixed-use tower up to 20 stories tall as requested in the rezoning. The company brought on Raleigh architecture firm Clearscapes, which has an intimate history with the site. An LLC addressed to the company has owned it since 1990. At about That time, Clearscape's founding partner, Schuster and his wife, Mary Ann Howard, converted part of the property, an old plumbing supply building, into their downtown Raleigh residence, with the firm's offices then right next door. Howard lives there today. Schuster died in 2019. The property also includes office space and retail, and over the years, the company expanded the parcel to reach Dawson Street. These historic buildings on the property will be preserved, and conditions in the filing prohibit development on that part of the site unless the existing buildings are destroyed in the event of disaster or unintentional damage. The Dawson Street portion of the assemblage features a quarter acre of surface parking and is owned by SIJ LLC, affiliated with Chatham Asset Management, the new owner of the McClatchy Company, parent company to the News and Observer. Upscale homes to start at $1.7 million. Construction is set to begin this year on a new high-end community in Raleigh, with prices starting in the seven figures as demand continues to grow for upscale homes. This spring, developer Arquitera Land LLC of Raleigh plans to start work on Norwood Ridge, a gated community featuring 19 homes across 38 acres at 14112 Norwood Road, between Creedmoor and Six Forks Roads, north of Interstate 540. Home prices will start at $1.7 million, according to the developer. The community has signed on three custom home builders to handle construction: Blue Heron Signature Homes of Raleigh, Boast Custom Homes of Cary, and KJ Construction of Raleigh. Alcantara Land bought the land for the development last summer for $1.9 million. Stanley Martin Homes plans condos. A Virginia developer is eyeing its latest project in the Triangle, with plans to bring a mix of traditional townhomes and stacked two-story condos to a site in North Raleigh. Earlier in January, Stanley Martin Homes filed plans for The Point at Raven Ridge, calling for around 180 condo-style townhomes. Stanley Martin Division President Hampton Pitt says the project will include a mix of traditional townhomes as well as two over two stacked townhome units. We hope to close development work by late summer this year and start vertical construction and to start sales late summer 2023, he says. Developer plans entry-level luxury. Alliance Residential of Arizona paid $5.5 million for property at 4100 Buffalo Road, according to a Wake County deed dated January 12, with plans to for the PROS New Hope apartment community. The project calls for 344 apartment units. The property is situated on 15.67 acres at the corner of Buffalo and North New Hope Roads, across the street from a Lidl store. "We call it entry-level luxury," says Donald Santos, managing director for Alliance Residential. And finally, we have a big number, 1,000. That's how many homes an LLC addressed to Southeast Land Management of Charlotte wants to be allowed after filing a rezoning request for 279.78 acres at 2509 and 2521 Robertson Grove Road and portions of 8301 and 8317 Buffalo Road in Raleigh. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Wall Street Gyrations May Thwart Deal Closings. In the past few days, one of the biggest initial public offerings in recent years was consummated, with private equity firm TPG pricing its shares at $29.50 on a $9 billion valuation. The stock trades at about $32 currently. That's the good news. The bad news is that yet another highly prominent IPO, JustWorks, a human resources software company, postponed its public markets debut at the last minute, citing unfavorable market conditions. And the handful of biotechs that went public in recent days are all trading under their IPO price. Syncor Pharma, Vigil Neuroscience, and Hillstream Biopharma all come to mind. And now we have a schizophrenic Wall Street with wild gyrations almost every day. Couple that with the statements from the Federal Reserve on January 26, and you are staring at a deals market questioning itself about transactional value that goes beyond inflation, Omicron, Ukraine, and other macroeconomic headwinds. For investors, institutional in public markets and individual in private markets, that's not a good place to be. And just like we saw after the burst of the dot-com bubble and, to a lesser extent, the fallout from the Great Recession, The flight to cash flow positive companies and entities with strong operating margins already has begun. What a concept, eh? In the meantime, most IPOs are getting trashed. More than 70% of the 400 companies that went public in 2021 via traditional ways are trading below their IPO price. Investors that back IPO deals are demanding deep discounts before they even consider an opening offer. A Bank of America report indicates IPO deals have fallen an average of 14% in 2021 after 6 months of being traded on U.S. exchanges. The historical six-month average of IPOs, a 14% gain, the Bank of America report states. This change in deal-making and investing mood makes it really dramatic after a historic 2021, when the mergers and acquisitions activity was one of the highest in recent years. Goldman Sachs had its hands on 235 deals in 2021. J.P. Morgan Chase helped buyers and sellers close 221 deals, and Morgan Stanley's corporate finance folks were involved in 189 deals, according to numbers from The Deal. But there is another issue that soon is going to make companies think twice before jumping into the public markets: tackling the issue of ESG, environmental, social, and governance indices. Refinitiv Lipper, a financial markets data provider, estimates investors poured a record $649 billion into ESG funds globally in 2021. Moreover, sustainable funds now make up about 10% of all fund assets. Refinitiv Lipper notes, companies are coming under increasing pressure from investors to disclose ESG information around areas such as climate change, human capital management, and biodiversity. Company CEOs and chief financial officers would have to provide detailed disclosures on their contributions to climate change. And if some advocacy groups have their way, that will mean disclosing greenhouse gas emissions of companies, their suppliers, partners, and even those related to their product and services, from gasoline to bank loans. Just goes to show companies may soon have to prove their worth beyond marketing and social hype to attract investors. At least temporarily, because the pendulum will violently swing the other way toward irrational exuberance. It always does. And also on the Viewpoint page, we're going to read a guest column written by Patrick McHugh, a research manager at NC Budget and Tax Center. The headline, NC Economy Struggles for Full Recovery. A massive federal response to COVID-19 staved off what could have been the worst economic collapse in the country's history. But we're not out of the woods yet. In 2021, the stock market was on a tear, many working people have more leverage to secure wage gains, and federal assistance kept millions of North Carolinians from experiencing complete financial ruin. All that said, we're still far from full recovery, and in a lot of the economic divides in our state that have gotten even worse. In spite of the low headline unemployment rate, there were still around 70,000 fewer jobs in November of last year than before COVID-19 decimated our economy. There were still nearly 15,000 more people looking for work in November than before COVID-19, clear proof that the will to work remains for many North Carolinians. Supplementary unemployment, not a drag on job recovery. For all of the hand-wringing and carping about by some politicians and special interest groups, it's pretty clear now that supplementary federal unemployment benefits that put an additional $600 a week into the pockets of people who'd lost jobs during COVID-19 were not holding many people back from taking or getting back to work. The biggest monthly gain during 2021 came in June, while those benefits were still being paid out and the public health context allowed more economic reopening. Employment gains in the 3 months we have data for since federal benefits stopped flowing, September through October, was just over 12,000 per month, a far cry from the wave of job growth some voices had been predicting for months. Wave of retirements and deepening economic divides. One of the most important and least discussed stories in the pandemic economy is how a surging stock market has deepened the divide between workers with retirement accounts based in stock value and workers without access to that source of wealth. It should be no surprise that a lot of workers who were lucky enough to benefit from those stock gains have chosen to avoid the health risk of in-person work and decided to retire early. Based on surveys conducted through mid-2021, roughly 165,000 North Carolinians entered retirement. This reality is both a major reason employers are struggling to find workers. Even more importantly, this trend deepens the divide in lived reality between white-collar people with nice retirement accounts and the millions of lower-wage North Carolinians who are cut off from that source of economic security. A Tale of Two Economies. The headline employment figures mask a deep divide that has persisted throughout the pandemic between the job prospects in highly paid professions and lower wage industries. Data from mid-August indicate that while jobs paying over $60,000 a year have increased substantially compared to pre-COVID levels, more than one out of every five jobs paying less than $27,000 are still missing. Given that many of the good-paying jobs where growth is happening require specialized skills and experience, substantial support is needed for people who lost low-wage positions during the pandemic to access those opportunities. And now we turn to a general news story in the Triangle Business Journal. Is IBM ready to make another Red Hat-like deal? This is written by Lauren Onasorge. 2.5 years after IBM closed on its $34 billion mega buy of Raleigh's Red Hat, could another buyout be on the horizon? It was a question posed to IBM executives on January 24 following the company's latest quarterly earnings report, which saw revenue shoot up 6.5% to $16.7 billion. Red Hat revenue was up 19% in the fourth quarter to $6.2 billion. With valuations starting to dip, analysts asked IBM CEO Arvind Krishna if more deals could be imminent. Krishna told analysts that while some targets may become approachable, IBM hasn't changed its M&A formula. M&A has to have an economic benefit for our company and our shareholders, he told analysts, though he did point out that Big Blue has more than $20 billion in flexibility over the next 3 years. As prices come down, certainly more things come within range, Krishna said. Logan Perk, an analyst with Edward Jones with a buy rating on IBM stock, says that with software valuations dropping, it could be perfect timing for IBM. Declining valuations allow companies like IBM to be really aggressive in pursuing targets that just 2 months ago were unpursuable, he says. Park sees two potential buckets, one involving companies that could expand IBM's hybrid cloud capabilities, and the other is consulting firms. If you could buy smaller agencies that bring in expertise for cloud, that further helps landing new business, Park says. David Holt, an equity analyst at CFRA Research, maintained a hold rating on IBM January 25. Holt says he doubts IBM would make another transformational acquisition like it did with Red Hat. That's assuming the initial strategy goes as planned, he says. On the consulting front, a smaller deal is possible, particularly as IBM works to stitch together different applications from partners such as Microsoft and SAP. Should IBM pursue a deal in the consulting realm, Holt predicts something in the engineering arena would help them fill the gaps and make a more full-rounded spectrum of opportunities and offerings to bring clients. However, he did say that despite what IBM executives said on the earnings call, a divestiture could be on the horizon, pointing to the company's Watson product as a possibility. Krishna said not to expect any major divestitures. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.